Today's daf in Masechet Nedarim, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Samach Zayin, and we are about to hear from our intrepid Kapitan. Na'ara hama'urasa via uba'ala mefiri nedareha. So, we are on, as you can see, a completely new track. Our Masechet has moved on from the understanding of Nedarim, the basis of Nedarim, and so on, into the dinim of canceling Nedarim, which, as we've seen, is part of the most important thing that defines Nedarim, that they are cancelable. And it's goofy because of that, that the Parsha begins with the words, Zeh HaDavar, as opposed to the normal way that we open up a Parsha. Zeh HaDavar is something that is darshaned, that is not an absolute. So we darshan Zeh HaDavar, Davar Zeh, Lo Yenoyeg El HaBedor HaZeh, and so on and so forth. Here too, it's an indication that it's a non-reality. As, interestingly enough, Shchut Echutz opens with Zeh HaDavar, and of course that's Rabbi Nosson's entire point. Kol HaNoyder Kilu Bon HaBama. Those are all Zeh HaDavar issues. Anyway, in order for us to understand this properly, we need to actually look inside in the Parsha of Matot, and I would strongly suggest that in order not to get confused, you bring yourself a Chumash Bamidbar and open up to the beginning of Matot, which is Perek Lamed, so that you can look inside and see the complex way that the Torah has presented the concepts of Hafarat Nedarim. So while everybody's busy getting their Chumashim, let me just point out that we have, of course, just to remind you, obviously not pointing out, but we have two completely different sugyas when it comes to the cancellation of Nedarim. One of them is called Hatara, and one of them is called Hafara. The Hafara is applicable only in the cases of a husband or a father. And the other concept of Hataras Nedarim, Hataras Nedarim, of course, is the din of Bezdin, being Matir Bishlosha, or Yochid Mumcha, being Matir, even alone. All of these things will be explained in the program to come. And there's a tremendous difference between these Lashonos, because Hafara is a cancellation from this point forward, and a Hatara is completely uprooting the neder from the beginning, so that it's as if it was never there at all. So the first part here is a discussion of the nature of hafara. Hafara is expressed in Parshat Matot. I'm sure all of you have your chumashim by now, except those who like to come late and then didn't hear about having your chumashim, but it would be a good idea to have your chumashim. So let's take a look at the way the Torah introduces the concept of hafara. This is in Perek Lamed, after the Zeh HaDavar that introduces, in Pasuk Dalet. So the Masechet up until this point has been discussing the opening psukim. Ish ki yido neder Hashem, lo yachel dvoro, kol yotzi mipiv yaaseh. That is what we've been engaged in. Now we're moving on to the next Pasuk and what follows. V'isha ki tidor neder Hashem. Alright, so we're talking about here a woman who is still in the rishus of her father. She is a nara, but the truth is that we know that there's a din of bedikas nedarim even before the year of narut, where over there it's possible for mufla somuch leish to be able to make a neder even as a katan or a ktana, which we'll discuss later. And this Bnei Ureha in no way means that it cannot be a neder that was called before the Neurim. V'shama isha avia rather et nidra. So when her father hears about this neder, the neder or the iser that she was asra al nafsha, so that there's a din of hafara not only on nidre iser, but also on nidre hegdesh, and he's just quiet. He doesn't respond. So if he doesn't say anything to cancel it, then it's going to be chav. But ve'imeniya viota b'yom shomo, if, however, he turns her away by saying, I don't like this, or he is to be monea her, and that's where we get the din of hafara, and it means that till the rest of the day, he has an opportunity to say, I don't like that neder. So then, if he changes it, kol nidareh v'esareh asher asra nafsha, lo yakun. V'Hashem yislach la keinia viota. If she even doesn't know that her father was made for the neder, so then Hashem will forgive her, but she did something bad by being over on her neder, even though it really didn't exist any longer, because she should have respected her own words. Now here's where things start getting confusing. So far, we've discussed the din that the father can be made for the neder of a nara that is still in his rishus. Now what happens in the next pasuk? V'imayoti yela ish, if she goes and gets married, unidorea aleha, and there are still nidorim that she had made from before she was married, omiftas vata asher asra al nafsha, v'shama isha, so now her husband hears about it. Before we had the same words, v'shama avia, now it's v'shama isha, and echarishla, which is what it said before about avia. It says, v'echarishla avia v'komo, the same thing is true over here. If isha echarishla v'komo nedareha v'esareha asher asra nafsha yakumo. So it seems up until this point that the pasuk is giving two situations. One situation where she was unmarried in her father's house, where the father has the right to be made for the nedarim, and the other situation where she's married, and now the husband takes over the rights of the father. However, this is not what it means, as we can see that it's totally untenable as we continue reading the psukim. And that is, let's continue. Okay, the next one still fits in. V'im shmo isha yaniota. This is exactly as the same as we said about the father. V'im einia viota b'yom shmo lo yakum. That's what it says here. That if b'yom shmo yaniota, then the same words. Hashem yislachla, everything great. Now, the next pasuk talks about a neder of an almana grusha. Okay, that's the third situation. First, she was a youngster in her father's house. Then she got married. Then she got divorced, or her husband died. Then there's no one that will be involved in her nedarim, and therefore kol asher asra al nafsha yakum aleha. Which seems rather obvious. I mean, there's nobody there that actually can cancel the neder. So we're going to be discussing that. But here comes the biggest problem. V'im beit isha nadara, o asara isara al nafsha b'shvua, v'shama isha v'hecharishla, lo iniota, what? We just said that. I understand. We said before, if she got married, imayoti ele ish, unedorea aleha, v'shama isha b'yom shamo, etc., etc. Now we're going through the whole thing again? V'im beit isha nadara, v'shama isha v'hecharishla, lo iniota. Sounds familiar? Yeah, it's the same exact pasuk as three pasukim before. And then it goes on again to repeat. Then, same thing. We've got this Hashem Yislachla Loyakum three times. Then we come up with another pasuk that doesn't seem to be adding anything. Well, wait a minute. You never said anything about La'anot Nafesh before. How come now we're talking about La'anot Nefesh particularly? Okay, that's a hint. Isha yikimeno, v'isha yifereno. V'im echarish yacharish la isha. Not again. Oh my God. Well, what's it adding over here? Well, here it adds that it's miyom el yom. Before it said biyom sham o. Now, I don't know. Is that a big difference? Well, we're going to see about that. Ve'kimet kol nidorea. Now, this is absolutely, I mean, it's totally untenable. So what the Gemara is going to come out with is that we're actually talking about completely different situations. The first situation is the Nara in the father's house. The second situation is the Imhayoti Yela Ishna. Of course, we're familiar with that language of Havaya. Imhayoti Yela Ish means that she is an Arusa. She is not a Nesua. And, I mean, what's rather obvious is that in the case that follows, it says Ve'im Beit Isha Nadara. That's the exact opposite of the words Unedarea Alea, correct? Imayoti Ola Ish Unedarea Alea means that if at the point that she gets married, she had Nadarim from before, then Vishama Isha, he can cancel it. But then the next pasuk says, no, only if these are Nadarim that she made in Beit Isha Nadara, which means that her husband would not have rights to cancel Nadarim from before. You're driving me crazy. First you say that if she brings the Nadarim in when she comes into the marriage, then the husband can cancel it. Then you say, but if she made Nadarim while she was married, then the husband can cancel it. If he could cancel it, if we said even if it was from before, certainly can cancel it if he tries to make it now, right? So what's going on? Again, obviously, that's a different situation. But still, even if it's a different situation, how do you explain the fact that in situation B, which was Imayoti Ela Ish, that she's an Arusa, how do you explain the fact that if she's an Arusa, then the husband can cancel her neder, even if it came in with her into the marriage? But if she's a Nesua, then he can't. That's crazy. She's more in the rishus of her husband if she's a Nesua than if she's an Arusa, correct? Now, how does all of this add up? It adds up beautifully. If we understand that the vav at the beginning of the pasuk, ve'im hayoti ela ish, unedorea aleha, is an extension of the previous situation where she was a nara bebeit avia. And it's telling me that now there's a complication to being a nara bebeit avia, because now she is partially married in the sense that she's an Arusa. Now, if she's an Arusa, her Arus does not have rights to cancel her neder. That's clear from the next situation of Im Beit Isha Nadara. So then the husband gets the rights. So then how could the Arus have more rights? There's only one possibility, that the Vav is an extension of the father's rights. And what we're saying is, now that there's an Arus, he, father, needs the Arus to go along with him in canceling her neder. But since the father is there, and the father is the one who has Rishus over the Nadarim from before the time that she was Arusa, basically that Zechus to those Nadarim is retained in the situation of an Arusa because of the fact that the Arusa is still in the rishus of the father partially. Remember, he's the one that's going to be mekabel her get if she gets divorced, and the husband has not yet got, as we saw in Ksuvos, has not yet received any of those things that are given to a baal while she's still in oros. That's the whole issue. Enu metame, he enu metamet lo, enu yorsha, and so on and so forth. The whole list of things that don't take place until the actual marriage, which is the nisuin. So what we have over here is a strange situation. In a sense, the Orus can deal with things that the Baal, he, the same man as a Baal, could not deal with. Namely, Kodmim. These are called Kodmim. And this is known as, thankfully, Gavi has appeared, this is known as Ein HaBaal Mefer BeKodmim. A Baal cannot deal with pre-existing Nadarim. So how is it that an Orus can deal with pre-existing Nadarim? Because it's not really he who is dealing with them. It's the fact that she still is Bereshus Ha'av, and that he is, so to speak, confirming what it is that the Av is doing about that bit of her rights that he has started to take over. Now, the Gemara is going to be going through the delicacy of the balance between the Rishus of the Av and the Rishus of the Baal, and this is all introduced in our Mishnah with statements that seem to be very repetitive, and actually turn out to be addressing this very balance. So now let's take a look at that Mishnah again and see its implications in light of our reading through the entire parsha that we did just now. Those of you who come late, you're going to have to do this in order to understand the Gemara. You're going to have to do this afterwards when you do your review. So go to Parshas Matot and read the entire piece of the opening, in which is Perek Lamed, the entire Perek Lamed in the Goyesha definition of these parshas. The entire Perek Lamed contains all of the five different situations of the Dorim, the first one being the Stam Nedarim of a male, the second one being the Nedarim of a woman in the Rishus of her father, the third being an Arusa, who has a Rishus of both the father and the Baal over, and therefore they need to be Mishtatev, and the fourth discussing a woman who is now an Almona or a Grusha, and the fifth discussing a situation where she is married, not as an Arusa, but as an Asua. So we need to understand the dinim of all of these circumstances.
Does Rebbe want to address Pasuk Tezayin? Only if you want to.
What?
We didn't discuss Pasuk Tezayin.
No.
It's critical.
No, we don't need to discuss it. Okay, so Nara Hama Urasa, Avia Ubala Mefirin Nidareha. Okay, so that adds up. And as we saw, it's what the Pasuk seems to imply. Now, the Mishnah tells us the same thing again, really. But, Afera Av, Eloi Afera Baal, if only the Baal Avde the Afara, not the Orus, or Hefer HaBaal, Eloi Afera Av, Eino Mufar. Well, that's rather clear. You just said, Avia Ubala, Befirin Nidarea. So, this apparently is coming to clarify that it's not either or, it's both together. And if one or the other does the afara and the other one does not, then it's not considered to be mufar. And need we even mention, if one of them is mikayem, that's going to be a disaster. Because even if the other one was not mikayem, it's not going to matter if he wasn't mefer. So we require his involvement in the hafara in order for the hafara of the other one to be enough. Says the Gemara, why all the repetition? What is going on over here? Hainu Reisha, didn't you say, Via Ubala Mefirin Nidarea? So obviously, if only one did and not the other, then it's not Mufa, right? No. I mean, couldn't you have read the opening of the Mishnah of Via or Baala? I mean, oftentimes that's what avav means. So it could mean her father or her husband are empowered for afarat nedarim o avia o baala katani. That's why we need to know that it means both together. Okay, but then when you say at the end, ein tzorech lomar shekiyem echad mehem, you're darn right, ein tzorech lomar, so why'd you say it? I don't understand. You're not adding anything. I mean, lama le lamisna. But what's the point of saying this? I mean, if hashta yesh lomar hefer ze below klum, that if even the loss of the hafara of one of them is enough to cancel what the other one was doing, so is there any need to tell me that kiyem echad mehem? Take out the words lama le. They don't add anything. Echad mehem. Is there any reason for have to say such a thing? It means it's completely and totally extra. So you're adding absolutely nothing. Lomali. Or the other girsa, the way the Bach has it, is kiyem echad mehem lomali. And take out the tzricha lamisne, which is the way that we normally talk about these things. And then put in instead, ki itzrich lamisne. So somebody messed up pretty bad over here. The Gears, but John, it's quite clear what we're saying. We're saying that it doesn't seem to be any reason, either by using the word lomali or tzricha lamisne. The point is we don't need those words, and we answer ki itzrich. I mean, fine. But first let's hear why don't we need it? Because, I mean, after all, if hashta yesh lomar hefer zebelo zevelo klum, ki emechad mihem is completely ridiculous. Answers the Gemara. Ki itzrich l'misne, kagon daheifer achad mehem v'kiyem echad. Now imagine a situation like this. One of them, either Orus or Av, does a hafara, and the other one now does a kiyun. Okay, so you say, all right, so it's overs, right? Is it overs? Because being as we're dealing with Nedarim, as we're going to see later on, we actually have an option of being Shoel on a Hakama. So that in the same way that the Neder itself has She'ela to a Chokam, the Hakama of the Av of the Neder has She'ela to a Chokam, or the Hakama of the Orus, or of the Baal. So what happens then? He goes and he has his Hakama canceled. So what would be the din now? He wants to go ahead and be Mefer. So Ma'o Detema, if you hadn't had these extra words in the Mishnah, you would have said to yourself, okay, so then my de'uke ha'akre. After all, how does a she'ela work? By completely undoing what it is that you did. Kamash balam. Therefore, when it says over here, ve'in tzarech lomer she'kiyem echad mehem, it's coming to tell you that if one of them was mekayim, then it ruins the hafara that was done by the other. And now that hafara is no longer usable. Now there's two ways of understanding this. The pashtus, which is the way that Ron explains it, is that this doesn't mean that you cannot cancel this neder. It simply means that the husband, that is the orus, and the father have to act in tandem. And therefore, in order to cancel this neder, you will have to redo the hafara, both of them, still assuming it's the same day, both of them without having something that would have undone that hafara between them. So it's not that you can't be made for this neder. That's how the Ramban paskins, and that is the way the Ran presents it. However, the Rambam, as the Ran points out, seems very clear about the Mishnah meaning exactly what it says. Ein tzarech lomer she'kiyem echad mehem, which clearly means if one of them is mekayim, the neder is certainly no longer haferable, right? And that indeed is what the Rambam says, that if there was a hakama between hafara A and hafara B, there is no way to get them together again, because the two hafaras have to be without something in the middle. Now, the Ran has a very big problem with this idea. And there's a lot of Ran here, as you've noticed, I'm sure, and much of the Ran is taken up with insights into the nature of the assumptions of the Gemara about these various things, as we're going to be seeing. It becomes very subtle and very close and upfront with the Ran. He talks to you like a fireside chat, you know, and he says, well, I don't like that, but I'll tell you what I think, and I suggest, and stuff like this. So he raises a lot of subtle issues that are difficult to convey rapidly. So one of the issues that he raises over here, and he says everybody is concerned with this problem, if the way that the hatara works with a neder is that it makes it as if the neder never existed. For instance, let's say in the case where a man goes ahead, he gives kedushin to a woman on condition that she has no nedarim. And she has lots of nedarim. So then the kedushin isn't chal. But if she gets a hatara from a chacham on all those nedarim, then the kedushin is chal because she didn't have nedarim. That's how clear it is that it's retroactive, so that it would even allow the kedushin to be chal. So therefore, the Ran asks the obvious question. If we're going to be uprooting the Hakama, and the only basis of that is from the din of uprooting through Hatara a neder, so the Hakama is like the neder, so we can uproot it. but then it shouldn't be there at all. And if it isn't there at all, what would it mean to say, as the Rambam does, that, well, there's nothing to do because you already had a hakama between the HaTorah of one and the HaTorah of the other. And what would it mean to say, they have to, like the Ramban does, that you'll have to go now and be mefer in tandem. I don't want to say together, because you don't really need to do it together. It just needs to be along the same day. But the point is that if we're going to be oiker the hakoma, then it ought to be as if the hakoma wasn't there at all. That's the problem. And so we begin a journey in the Ran's thinking, which continues throughout this entire sugya. And that is that if you have something that is weakened, and what do we mean by weakened? We're going to see throughout the entire sugya, and the Gemara is going to even raise the word weakened with kol shalei, and that becomes a major question throughout this sugya of hafara. How does hafara actually work? So since we have over here a concept of hafara that requires two people, so the question is, what happens when one is mefer and the other one isn't mefer? Is there an impact on the netter at all? That's going to be a question that the Gemara raises in the interim period. But because of this, the Ran wants to be mechalek between the way that the akira of the hakoma is going to be different in the case of kedushin, where over there it completely wipes out any memories of there ever having been nedarim at all, and the case here where the akira of the hakoma is not the same and not able to be completely undoing it. And his difference is based on the understanding of the difference between something that he calls a ma'aseh gamur and something that is not really a complete thing. So I'm only bringing this up. I normally wouldn't bring up the details in the Ran. I'm only bringing this up because it introduces us to the thinking of the Ran throughout the sugya that is going to end up being all interrelated. And this is the first place that he introduces his thinking about the idea of something that is too weak to be acted upon, as we'll see. So kedushin, the way he puts it, is kedushin that is a complete maisa. The moment that it's able to be chal, we will say that igloi milsa mil mafreya, that it was, there never was a neder, and it would be chal. The problem is that when you're dealing with hafara, and you only have the hafara of one, which cannot do anything for us, therefore it's only useful when the other one is there together with you, and the only way that it can be mitztaref is if they're able to do it together. And we're going to see that. If one of them does hafara and the other one dies, what happens to the hafara that was done by one? It disappears completely and has no impact. And we're going to see why that's important. But the point is, therefore, says the Ran, that something something that does not stand on its own, like an act of kedushin that can continuously be referred back to and say, did this act of kedushin take place? Was the condition fulfilled? Were there no nedarim? Yes, yes, yes. It certainly, there were no nedarim, and the kedushin is fulfilled. But how can you take something which didn't exist and make it exist through a tziruf when there wasn't a tziruf? You can't say that the fact that I take off the hakama makes it that the hafara was mitzuraf with the other hafara. Because over there, it's not the taking it away that's going to make the difference. It needed to be created as a single unit of a dual hafara. And there is no dual hafara. So therefore, again, the important nekuda is the hafara does not have a serious presence until it's linked together with the other hafara. This is the first strange thing that we find different about the nature of a Nara Hamu'urasa, which is the name of our parak, that gives us insights that we would not have had if there were no situation where hafarot need to be linked. Because we have this strange situation of linked hafaras, we get a lot of insights into the process of hafara that we would not have had before. And that's why this is sort of a laboratory for all kinds of strange interactions of things that are entangled, again, one with the other, and we can't really analyze them on their own. Baruch Avram has had a long Shabbos and a big cholent, and it's finally coming back to bite him. This despite the fact that he's vegetarian. Okay, so it continues the Gemara. Now, let's talk about the basic concept, says the Gemara. V'nara ha'me'urasa avia u'ba'ala me'firi nidarea. Where do we get that from? Minolan. So we've already gone through the parsha to get a little bit of the insights in the overall structure of this psukim, and we've noted that we really don't have much of a choice but to be explaining the case of ve'im hayotiyeh as a case of erisin and not a case of nisuin. Again, what were the indications, which the Gemara is going to gradually uncover? The indications were that later on we have a pasuk that talks about im betisha nadara. So obviously there is where we introduce marriage. So what is the im hayoti ela ish? We have another indication in the fact that im hayoti ela ish, it says unedarea alea, from before. But in the latter part, which is talking about a real marriage, it says the im beit isha nadara, and the nedarim were not there from before, which makes it very clear that the Baal cannot be made for Nedarim that were there before. So we see that obviously there must be some other source for the Hatara of Kodmin in the case of that whatever Imayoti Eliish is. That's what led us to understand in general that there's no way to read the Parsha unless we introduce this new state of an Orus with an Av. But now the Gemara is going to gradually uncover all of these issues in more subtle ways than we have. So ask the Gemara Minola. On my Rabba, well, that's the meaning of the pasuk. V'im hayoti yeleish unedorea aleha. I tell you, this can only be understood as mikan lenara umurasa shavio ubala befir nedorea. Now, when Rabba made that statement, he took into consideration all of the things that we were saying, and he threw it at us. He said, listen, think about that pasuk, and you will see that that's the only way to understand it. Fine, but he didn't explain himself, so the Gemara is now going to try to understand what Rabba meant. And the obvious question is, well, I don't know. It sounds like the pasuk is talking about marriage. What makes you think that it's talking about an arusa? The Ema Haikrob and Nisua Aktiv. No, it can't be talking about a Nisua, because then how do you explain the Pasuk later that says, Ve'im Beit Isha Nadara? Well, I can explain that. You can? Yeah. Because if both of them are talking about a Nisua, then, of course, you're going to ask, and why would we need two Psukim to tell me the same din of a Nisua? Ah, because the second Pasuk makes it very clear that the only time that the husband has a right to be made for a neder is if it were made in his rishus. And therefore, it teaches us, Ein ha-ba'al mefer bekodmim. There you go. Excuse me? So, all right, fine. So then just say that pasuk. I don't get it. I mean, first you need to mess up our minds by telling us that nidarea aleha. And then you need to clarify, by the way, don't believe your messed up mind. It's only that if it's not Bekodmin. Well, what is that supposed to mean? I mean, Lamaisa, if we had that Pusik alone, then we would know everything if there's no separate din of an Arusa. So Valav Mamela Shamatmina, I don't get it. So then if you only had the Pusik of Im Beit Isha alone, you would know everything. You would know, A, Abal is Mefer. B, a Baal is not made for Bekodmim, so that doesn't make any sense at all. Therefore, Shema Mina, that we must be talking about a different situation in which we are not yet Bebet Isha, and therefore we have that Vav that interrelates the Koach of the Father with the Koach of the Orus, and in fact explains the strange reality that the Nedarea could have been Aleha from before, whereas if she would be completely married to this guy, there would be nothing that he could do about Nedarim that were there from before, even though yesterday, before they went to the Chuppah, he could have. Weird, but not weird when you understand why. The father was involved in the situation before the Chuppah, and now we don't have the father's involvement after the Chuppah. Or you know what? I mean, I can go to it straight from the words, you know? Of course it's not talking about a case of nisuin, because it says ve'im hayotiyeh. Hayotiyeh is a lashon of what? Kedushin. So havaya is mashma kedushin. I mean, obviously you can ask me, but it's also mashma nisuin. True. But we don't need it to tell me nisuin, do we? Because it says, im beit isha nadara. So this just makes it much clearer. We know it's not referring to nisuin, and the word itself means erisin. So everything is perfect. The pasuk is making itself absolutely clear. Im beit isha nadara is a nisua, and im hayoti is an arusa. Great. Okay? So there's nothing else to discuss, right? Well, no, not necessarily. Because, I mean, why can't we say the ema that av lechudei mefer? Because, I mean, look, let's think about it. She has not yet been yotzei mirshus avia, right? I mean, that's the whole point. Otherwise, why would we be talking about the ability to be mefer unedorea aleha, which are kodmim? And up until this point, the father has had the entire rishus over her nedarim. And she has not been yotzei from the shus of the father. Okay. Now, as far as the orus is concerned, so why are we bringing up the orus over here? I'll tell you why. I mean, you are jumping to a conclusion that we're putting the orus on the same level as we're putting the av. Does that really make sense? I mean, because the Baal, as insofar as an orus is an incipient Baal, would he have Baruch Avram, as an incipient Baal, would he have any rights to Kodmim? No. No rights whatsoever. So therefore, for us to make the assumption that now that Torah has made the Orus and the father equal partners should take away the ability to be made for Bekodmim, because now the father can't be made for Bekodmim, since he doesn't have the full rights to the Nedarim, and we know the Baal never gets any rights to Kodmim. So what's the correct way to look at this? The correct way to look at this, I would think, is that the Torah is saying that we need the confirmation of the Oros, but he can't really do anything. And that's why when the Av is being Mefer, it's really the Afara is coming from him. So then all that it means over here in this Pasuk, of im hayot yeh le'ish, it doesn't mean that the orus can be mefer at all. It just means that the orus can definitely mess things up by being mekayim. That's what it means. He has to go along with it, but his act of hafara does not really do anything to the neder. His act of hafara is merely confirmation of what it is that the av is doing. That's the point. This is how the Ran understands what it means when it says, let us assume that it's the father alone that is going to be mefer. Fine. So this makes a great deal of sense, answers the Gemara, because if that would be the pshat, then, now this is very misleading the way that it appears in the Gemara. Im Kain, if that would be true, then the whole first parsha of Anara in Beit Avia, why was it said? Now, that's a ridiculous response. What do you mean, why was it said? That's the whole point, is to tell me that the father was Rishus, has Rishus. But what it means to say, explains the Ran, is, why start off with the din that while she is a penuya and completely unmarried, the father can be mefer? If in essence what you're telling me is that the father is mefer even when she's an arusa, then don't you think that you should have put this pasuk there? In other words, start off with what happens with a woman who has a father and has got an arus in the way. What happens? Well, the father will still be mefer nidareha, and if the baal is mekayim nidareha, so then he won't be able to. That will give us the whole thing in one. So then we'll know the kayach of the av to be made for nidarim, and the kayach of an arus to mess up that afara by being mekayim the neder. That's all. In which case, it would be a kal v'chomer. If an av can be made for on his own, even when there's an arus in the way, so kol shekin, if there's no arus in the way, everything will be dependent on the av. But the Torah did not do it that way. First, it presents a situation of a father. Then it talks about, and what happens if there's an arus? Now, that can only mean that we are actually sharing the rights, and that the act of hafara is not just a confirmation of the hafara sa'av, it is adding the power of the hafara sa'av, in which case the arus must be an active partner over here in the breakdown of her neder. So, let's see that inside again. Says the Gemara, if you're going to tell me av l'chudei mefer, so then putting the posik of Isra Isar Beit Aviyah, and then say that ima viya niota v'ashem yislachla, and so on and so forth, why was it put here before the erisin? Isn't it obvious that hashta yesh lomar, that b'mokom arus the av can be mefer l'chudei? So kol shekein, shelo b'mokom arus miboy? I need to introduce a case of a woman who is still bebet aviyah and doesn't even have an arus before we get to the part of im hayotiyah? That doesn't make sense. Okay, true. Now, says the Gemara, how about if we reverse our assumptions? In other words, now you've shown me, because of the way that the psukim are arranged, that in fact there is a sharing of power between the arus and the av, correct? So if that's the case, then maybe what that would mean is that an arus acting on his own without the av should be able to be mefer as long as he doesn't need the av. Because now we see that our original understanding is not supported by the psukim. Now we see that what we thought in that let's limit the rights of the Orus merely to being able to mess up the Afar of the Av by being Mikayim, that's not true. Okay, so then if that's the case, that it is not so that a Manara HaMu'urasa has not left the Rishus of the Father. So now maybe we should re-examine our assumption. Now it turns out that a Manara HaMu'urasa is no longer in the Rishus of the Father the way she was before. We had no choice but to accept that bitter pill. So now maybe we should look at it the other way around. And let us say that what the psukim seem to be saying is that the orus is actually the baal. Because it doesn't even mention the father, does it? The only reason that we know that the father is involved here is because of the vav that says ve'im hayoti ela'ish. And what we understood at the end was the fact that it would be possible for her to be mefer, for him to be mefer, even bekodmim. And that, in the end, of course, is going to be the proof that this can't be the pshat. But we have to wait till the Gemara gets there. If we're really going to take the av out of the equation, how will we take the av out of the equation? We will say that the very fact that the Torah creates one situation where a child is in the rishus of the father, and then goes on to create another situation where the father does not appear at all in the pasuk to be active in the hafara. It just says, what's going to be? Let me read the pasuk to you again. Those of you who don't have your chumash open. So, again, v'ima yoti ele ish unidorea aleha v'shama isha b'yom shamo ואחרישלה, וקומו נדריה ויסוריה שרצרה נפשה, ואם ביום שמוע אישה יני אותה, השם יסלח לה. That's all it says. Now what makes you think that the father has anything left? Now that you've understood that an arusa has gone out of the rishus of the father, the only thing that's left is the vav of ve'im hayoti ela ish. Does that mean that the father is a full partner? No. It means give the poor guy something. Make him feel he's got something. Okay. What can you give him that will make him feel he's something? What most father-in-laws have that can still screw things up royally. Okay. So we give him that right. If he says, no, I like this netter. All right, fine. So then the Baal cannot be Mefer. But that doesn't mean that the father actually achieves something by being Mefer. So maybe that's the way that we should look at it. And that just because of a Vav, Mosif, Inyan, Rishon, then we're not going to be able to talk about it as if he's a partner. So let's see that inside. Asks the Gemara, maybe we should say now that the idea over here is that the Orus Luchudei could be Mefer. The Av needs the Orus, but the Orus doesn't. So if you'll ask me, but if that's the case, V'chi tema Av de Katav Rachmano Lamanli, mi boili di I hekim hekim. So what about the fact that the Torah stuck the father into this with the Vav of V'imayotiye? That just tells me that in that event, he could mess it up by being Mekayim, the same thing we said before. As says the Gemara, no, because Im Kain, V'im Beit Isha Nadara Lomali. Then I don't understand. If the Oros is capable of doing all of this on his own, and the father is only going to be able to mess things up, so obviously, once they get married and the father's out of the picture, because we know the father loses all rights after the nisuin, so then why do I need to know that the husband can be Mefer? Obviously the husband can be Mefer. He was even the one that was being Mefer while she was only an Arusa. So what would be the point of the third stage in which he is in Nisua? So that im kein ve'im beit isha nadara lama melmai katav. Isn't it a kavachomer? Uma b'makom av, where she is still an arusa and she's still living in her father's home. Even there, you're claiming that the orus can be made for l'chudei. Shelo b'makom av, mi boy. Is there any question that after they're fully married, that he has full rights and the father can't get in? Well, no, wait a minute. I still need that pasuk, v'im beit isha nadara, don't I? Because that pasuk is the source of the din that ein habaal mefer bekodmin. So if I wouldn't have that pasuk, I would think that a baal could even be mefer bekodmin. Oh my God, what the heck are you thinking? That's hilarious. We're going to use the pasuk to tell me that the baal can't be mefer bekodmin. And so how do you explain the fact that the Oros can't be made for Bekodmin, you idiot? How could the Oros be more powerful than the Baal? I'll tell you how. Because the father is there, obviously. What kind of crazy question is this? So isn't that the point? Umine, don't you see that that itself is enough of a solution to your problem? Because obviously, could you say the Oros is made for Bekodmin if it's all on his own? But that after he gets married, then he can't be come on. So therefore, your question is ridiculous. Ela lav mishum shutfus de'av. This proves it. Your very question is the most beautiful proof of our theory. It's clear that there are two completely different sets, one in which we're using both the power of the av and the power of the orus, and it is not so that the father has lost all rights to her. Definitely not. And what happens over here is that the active hafara of the father is necessary, not just the lack of his doing a kiyum, or the equivalent, which is shutting up and not doing anything for that day. But the point is that this is a hafara that is created by two separate individuals. Now, how does that work? That the Gemara is going to talk about later. I mean, what is the meaning of a hafara that doesn't do anything without somebody else's hafara? How does that work? How do they join together? That the Gemara is going to discuss tomorrow. But meanwhile, we have clearly defined three separate situations, besides the others that are discussed that don't have to do with this particular problem. But that is the transition from a nara into a nara hama'urasa into an isha. And those are three different circumstances with three different dinim. Situation number one gives the father rights to, so far it appears, all of her nadarim. We're going to see that that may not be true. And the second situation allows the father and the orus together to deal with all of her nadarim, possibly, but including even kodmim. And the third situation allows a husband to deal only with nadarim that are nidrei yinui nefesh, that we saw, which we're going to examine tomorrow. How does that affect the nadarim on the earlier stages, that new concept of nidrei yinui nefesh, but that cannot have any power over nadarim that pre-existed the state of nisuin that gave him the right to hafara. Okay, so we've come up with some very amazing insight so far in how to understand the parasha in concepts such as Eina Avme for Bekaitmein and in new ideas such as Akira of a Kiyum, which we didn't think of before, and insights into the difference between an Akira of a Kiyum and the Din of Kiddushin, which led us to a new discovery that where Hafarot are joined, then they have to be actually not simply joined, but they have to be in tandem. And that means that you can't have something in between that breaks the link between them. And that would be even something which subsequently is removed, makes no difference. It still wasn't done in tandem. Okay, gentlemen, that was a lot of fun. I hope you have to have fun with Nadarim or you're finished because it's too complicated. It's an extremely basic lumdus mesechet. And therefore, the Ran here is so popular because it's an introduction of a lot of ways of thinking that we don't find in other mesechtot. The reason for that, of course, is the same for the reason that the Parsha of Nadarim is introduced with Ze HaDavar. It's all about mechanical kind of thinking, lumdasha kind of thinking. Not the general re'iyah of reality, but the kind of thinking that people do when they're nuts. So that includes all of the various thought processes, which can get very, very complicated, very interlinked. And this, of course, was granted to us by Moshe Rabbeinu as a gift, even for Pilpul. So we'll see you, Bezrat Hashem, tomorrow, where we continue. Go to...